Hello, you're about to listen to the Movie Mixtape with Dirk and Marcy. It's our shared pick this week for the Warm Blanket Mix, and we have our wonderful dear friend Mikey P on, who also does all of our lovely artwork for each of our episodes. And we have decided to go with 2022's Everything Everywhere All at Once. This movie is incredible. It's newer, so please try to watch it before listening to the episode. And as always, sit back, relax, be a rock, and enjoy the mix.
So into a bagel. Marcy, how are you doing?
That's an actual song in this movie. I'm so proud of you.
You're welcome. I think calling it a song overstates it a little bit, but I'll take the compliment.
It's a song. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll get nominated for anything, but it's
Oh, it's all about you and nominations at the minute, isn't it? You know, there's just something to be said for just creating something. Doesn't have to win an award. But welcome to episode 39 of the Movie Mixtape. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, you always throw it back so quickly. Just like, I don't know how I am. I was going to take the 10 seconds you were talking to work out how I was feeling. I'm feeling pretty good. Thanks very much. You know why I'm feeling pretty good?
Does it have anything to do with Mikey?
It's got a lot of things to do with Mikey P. Hello, Mikey P.
Hi, Mikey.
Hey, guys.
Welcome back.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
You know,
hi.
I'm welcomed. Thank you. I am honored again.
Mikey P, welcome. You are our guest on this episode of the Movie Mixtape. Welcome. Sit down. You'll be more comfortable. How are things with you?
Thanks, guys. Yeah, I'll answer the questions this morning.
Thank you.
She just kicked it back like we're in the elevator.
Jeez,
together.
It's like, it's not like we don't need content or anything. Come on.
I just traveled down the east coast of America from North Carolina or Miami to North Carolina.
Oh, jeez.
Like a 2-hour drive.
I went to my first Ren Fair in North Carolina.
Oh.
Yeah, and something dawned on me because we also stopped off at Disney World on the way up. And Disney, I think these places, it depends on the people who go there, because Disney feels very much, everybody has an attachment to Disney, but I feel like Disney, everybody wants it to themselves kind of feeling. Mm. And you're there with your kids and stuff, and everybody's kind of, you know, stressed out. But like this Ren Fair was welcoming, like more the merrier, and it just felt like such a good time, and it was a lot of fun.
Nice.
I drove back and, you know, super late. I'm throwing on the Pride and Prejudice episode, which was fantastic. And my son noticed the art on the car. It was a pretty cool moment. But I have opened tears with Brandon's voicemail last week. That was a special moment.
Yeah.
I was delirious. And that comes on. I DM'd him and I said, what a beautiful voicemail. I don't know if he wrote me back yet.
Yeah, that, I don't know. That was like perfect timing for me for that voicemail email, but he gave us like a heads up too, and then I still wasn't ready.
Well, yeah, he gave us a heads up that he was sending a really long email and that nothing else. Brandon,
he said it was going to be like emotional attachments to like Warm Blanket movies and things like that, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. And then you're listening to the email and you're like, oh wow,
yeah.
Like my heart. But it was so good. It was so good. But I don't know. Like, sometimes I feel like things happen when you need them the most. So, yeah, Brandon, I really needed that email last week. So, thank you.
What are we talking about this week? We are talking about the movie Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, aren't we? And we will be discussing that later on. But it is the shared episode in our Warm Blanket Mixtape. So, that's what we'll get to later on.
Are we sharing this blanket? We're sharing this warm blanket together? Is that what it
is? It's a giant blanket we're snugging. Sharing.
Well, now that you've offered it, I can't refuse that, can I? I'll pop over.
It has to stretch across the Atlantic, so yes, it needs to be a giant blanket.
I think it's a metaphorical blanket, isn't it?
No,
not literal.
I want it to be real. It's real to me, so.
Well, have you been doing all right, Marcy?
I am good. I'm doing a lot better this week. Put up my Christmas decorations. It's never too early for that. I don't want to hear it for the people that think it's early. So suck on that, you Christmas haters.
Suck on that, you Christmas suckers.
Mikey, did you start decorating? Well, I guess not. You just kind of got home like the other day. So
I haven't slept yet,
Mike. Yeah, I...
Well, you know, you can sleep after you decorate. That's what I'm saying.
I feel like in the world that we're living in, it's never too early to stick up your Christmas decorations. You know, you want to go full in early November. Go for it, kid. Whatever. Because there's certainly enough misery steeped in our feet around us. So get the goodness where you can. That's what I say, Marcy. I support you fully.
Okay. Are you decorated for Christmas?
No, I did suggest it this weekend. But Kate, my ever knowledgeable wife, suggested that if we got a new tree now, the leaves, all the pine's going to drop on the floor. So wait, we'll do it next week and then it should last. And I went, oh, smart, smart Christmas strategic plan you've got there, Katie. So that's what we're going to do.
And when we were talking about recording and we were talking about Thanksgiving, you could start earlier than us, Dirk, to do Christmas. And I was like, what? You know, what's Dirk doing for Thanksgiving? And I was like, oh, I'm such an idiot. I forget.
Yeah, I don't even really understand what Thanksgiving is. It's like when it's like when the Survivor Series is on, the WWE, and you all eat turkey. I don't really understand it beyond that. Is it worth understanding? No, I'm not disparaging it.
I mean, do you love food?
Yes.
Then you should understand.
Okay. But so like what are you thankful for? Like, is it a specific thing? Or is it like everybody has an individual thing in an envelope that they're thankful for?
So when we were little, you used to go around the table and say what you were thankful for, but now that we're all older, nobody says anything anymore. But it's just you make a lot of food with your family or now families because we go to multiple houses on Thanksgiving. And
but where's its origins? It's like one guy just go, do you know what? Should we just have a day where we say what we're really thankful for? Or was it like a specific thing that kickstarted it off?
It's a specific thing. So it's like the Native Americans and the Pilgrims, like when this country was first starting out, apparently they had like a big meal together.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and it's the last Thursday of every November.
There Not sure how that went for yeah. one for
Mike,
one of those groups.
Anything to add to that? I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't know how to farm. All, you know, it's funny, like Dirk, from the mm-hmm. most colonizing country in the world, they didn't associate with the people that they were kicking off their land. But there's a story where like they, you know, Native Americans, they taught us how to us. They taught the Pilgrims how to, you know, farm, I guess, and mm-hmm. then. Years later,
you know, stole their land and everything.
And stole all their
own. Them smallpox, yeah. As a thank you.
And every year we think about that.
Yeah. Well, now I'm enlightened and I can see why you really enjoy it so much. Luckily, I don't have to...
This is your first full year, right?
Well, I was... Yeah, do you know what? I was just thinking that. Our trailer, I think we released it the first week of January of 2022.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we started doing practice episodes about a year ago. Yeah. So it's kind of been like happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
For like
Look
a
at
year.
That, guys. I'm grateful you did that.
Oh, Mikey, we're grateful.
Let's appreciate
for
each
you.
Other.
Well, luckily, I'm British, so I don't have to thank anyone for anything.
Yep.
See, Dirk, that's what you do. It's just like this, except we have our mouths full of food when we say those things to each other. Mm-hmm. You had Thanksgiving. That's your first Thanksgiving. Welcome.
Oh, thanks. Where's me pumpkin pie? Hey, do you know what? Mikey. We've got you on, and I think this is the first time we've had you on since you've been doing the art for the episodes. I know you did it for Turtles, and that was the first time you'd done the art for us. But you've been doing it every single week, and it has been blowing our tiny little minds. So I tell you what, I am thankful for that, and you, Mikey. But how has that process been, being the artist in residence for the movie mixtape?
I will say there's pressure, but I've definitely been enjoying it. And you guys have keeping me on my toes and give me a project every week. I'm enjoying it. Since I started with my last episode, maybe this will be my
finale
episode where I stop doing it.
I wouldn't blame you.
I just do one of those AI algorithms and I give it to you guys. And you think
but the amount of times you've submitted art,
it's been great.
And Marcy's just gone, that's rubbish. Do it again. I've been embarrassed.
I know.
It's not even me saying it.
I know.
Disgraceful. Wow. I won't be surprised.
I'm getting... Did you feel that bump, everybody?
She has
that
a vision.
Was me getting thrown under the bus. Did anybody else feel that? There's a very cute, fun better. Little surprise in the art this week. That's all I'll say. So we'll let people see what that fun little surprise is. We have a little guest appearance in the artwork this week. So very, very cool. And yeah, Mikey, thank you. I love your artwork so much and always makes me happy. And you keep us on our toes because we don't know what we're going to get. We know it's going to be good, but we don't. I mean, like last week I was like, I'm going to melt on the floor right now. Thank you so much.
That was hard. I knew you loved that movie. So that was going to be hard.
So good. That Pride and Prejudice, I mean, that Pride and Prejudice, that Ready or Not, all my days, the last few weeks, all my days. So good.
Well, Dirk was nice enough to just be like, hey, you're doing the synopsis. I think that was last night. I literally like had my phone charging and I was like, oh, I guess I'm doing the synopsis. I did it last week, but you know what?
Well, come on now. Let's thrash it out in front of everyone. This is our shared movie, but I hadn't even seen it. So, like, it's the shared movie between you and Mikey. And you have made a big presumption because this is our Warm Blankets mixtape, which is a comfort movie. And you have presumed I'm going to think this is a comfort movie. So that's a bold statement. So on your head, be it. On your head, the synopsis, be it.
Ironically, the synopsis is something comforting we normally do here on this podcast. So I will get started.
I can feel it already.
Hi, Jobu Tabaki here. Moms, am I right?
Yes.
Always making you do stuff. Like, figure out their taxes so they pass their audit with the scary IRS lady. Make you play piano with your feet because they created a new universe where everyone has hot dogs for fingers. Or turn you into a chaotic villain destroying versions of your mother over several multiverses all because she can't show you real love and emotion because nothing matters. When all I'm trying to do is enter this everything bagel with literally everything on it to finally find some peace of mind in my mediocre life. But my mom decides she's going to finally open up and show me real love to try to stop me from going into the bagel. And while she's doing this, she reveals her dad emotionally abandoned her since basically day one, which helps explain why she is the way that she is. So actually, dads, am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sister.
Fuck, it always comes back to dads. Anyways, I'm going to slowly climb up this staircase and see what my mom is going to do about this bagel situation. Chilling with my bud Raccoonie while waiting for my mom to see everything and be everywhere all at once.
Beautiful.
You had that. That was well an easy, done. Easy well in the bag done. One. And it is still dads, am I right?
Do you know, that was real good. Thanks, Marcy. Do you know, how do you do a synopsis for this movie? So I've got, you know, I'm sure it's possible. And I think we just, well, do you know what? It is possible because you just did it. But bloody Nora, it's hard work, isn't it? Getting your head around what's going on. So you and Mikey, you pick this. So do you want to, what do you want to start off with?
I guess the beginning, because even though the, you know, when you're in the middle of the movie, you're like, wow, this is crazy. But even the beginning, just a simple introduction to these characters is really done at a quick pace. And I was listening to the commentary are we going the Daniels or Daniels?
Depends whether you want to be correct
or not. And they were saying that Daniels. And they were saying how they wanted, they were... One of the weirdest influences they had was Home Alone. And that beginning was when you come into the house, you're meeting 100 family members.
Yes.
And you're not only that, you're going to every single corner of the house and you're going to return to those corners throughout the whole movie. And I thought that was such a spot on comparison, because it is, you get Evelyn and you get her situation and you get who her husband is and you get the conflict she has with her daughter, and you get funny anecdotes with the customers, and it just feels like, and there's her father's coming over for, you know, for a celebration. And I was thinking, you know, before this, the reason I loved it so much, I think I'll start off by saying that is it was, the audience is going to be smart enough to just pay attention. I think when I watch movies too, I kind of sometimes drift off because it's like, okay, this is going to be like this, and it's going to, you know, this intro could have been very long. And I was really down on miniseries, like Netflix series or something like that, until Andor came out. God bless that, Andor. Praise you, Andor. But I was kind of burnt out on miniseries because I'm like, it's lazy writing. Like, you can just, this would have been, and I started thinking this movie was ripe for, it could have been a Netflix series. And the whole first episode could have been the situation that we saw within like 10, 15 minutes. And I thought it was done so well.
Yeah, I had the same. I had exactly the same thoughts. Like, how good an introduction is that? That first scene, you know, everybody's motivations. One of the things with the Wayman character, who's the husband, the father in the film, is you see him being like a clown and also kind-hearted, but you also see that he's got divorce papers in his hands. So you kind of get this idea that he's more than he is appearing to be as well. And so even like little tiny little things like that, you don't just get a surface level introduction. You get a pretty deep level in 15 minutes. Definitely.
It's all at like whiplash speed, though. Mm. But I like what you said, Mikey. They aren't holding your hand. They just kind of have faith in the audience that you're going to pick this up and you're going to be able to follow along, because it does not slow down once ever in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good taste too of like, okay, so we're running a marathon here. And if you want to keep up, you got to keep up, like, or you're just going to fall off this wagon. And I kind of really love that it just embraces its chaos and it holds nothing back in this movie whatsoever.
Yeah, the character, Wayman, like his character, you understand who he is right off the bat. You understand mm-hmm. Michelle Yeoh, her character and all her traits and I don't know. It's just done so well and so quickly. Even like the little quips of like, she looks at the TV and, you know, Bollywood movie, and she's looking at, that's the first time she like pauses, and cause she's like a dreamer and that comes back later on in the movie. They establish the whole movie, even though it's bonkers, they establish it really within these first 15 minutes.
Yeah. So we see the three members of the family, don't we? We see Evelyn, the mum, Wayman, the dad, and Joy, the daughter. And they're the family we follow throughout the course. And what I love is, I think, Marcy, what you're sort of saying, it is so fast. Everything moves so quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think you do have to be kind of comfortable with the idea of you're not going to be totally understanding what's going on the whole way through this, and that you've got to have faith that there's going to be something towards the end that is a resolution. And I love that. I hate when like you're watching something and somebody goes, I don't get it. Like, of course you don't get it. It's just started, mate. You know, let it just keep going. You know, if you don't get it at the end, fair enough, we'll have a conversation. But we've just sat down, we're 15 minutes in, enjoy the confusion. You know, it's a mystery that's about to unfold.
Yeah.
I will say one really nice thing. I saw this movie by myself in a theater when it had its wide release back in April. And I went by myself because I just wasn't sure if anybody else I knew wanted to go. So I just was like, well, it's probably going to be an empty theater. My theater was actually almost sold out, and, you know, I don't live in, like, New York or LA. I don't live, like, in a movie town necessarily. You know, most people are just seeing generic basic things, but what was nice was I could tell everybody was hanging on in the theater, and that was a really cool experience, because that's a movie that, I don't know, like, if my parents tried to watch this, I think they would immediately be like, all right, we're turning this off. Like, they just wouldn't get it. I mean, but like you said, Dirk, they wouldn't get it from the get-go, and then they'd be like, well, we're done here. So it was nice just to, because, I mean, I've seen this movie a couple times now, and there's still things I don't get, and I'm picking up on, but I think that's what makes this such a rewatchable movie, which that's an element of Warm Blanket. And that was like a reason why, you know, I think it fits for this mix specifically. But I will say this, that as soon as it ended, I was like, crap, I should have taken Dan, because there's something we'll talk about later that I was like, I can't go a whole week not yelling this one thing in the house every day. And so we went on Easter Sunday, like a couple days later, and I made him go see it with me. And then the thing that I knew I wasn't going to be able to not yell, I just stared at his reaction when it was happening in the theater, because I just wanted to see if he had the same reaction I did, and he did. So now it's the thing we yell all the time, each and every day, and we'll get into that. It may or may not involve a raccoon. That's all I'm going to say right now.
It's funny you mentioned your mom, too. You said you should show it off. I actually brought it on this Thanksgiving trip to show my mom, because she's a big Marvel fan and big cinematic Marvel fan. And I think the Russos produced it. So I was like, you know, it's sort of like Avenger-ish. And this is like a superhero type of movie. You just have to kind of go with it. And she's open-minded. I think we didn't finish, but like there were certain parts that come up where she was just like, what is happening right now. Like, it was a little too much for, going a little too fast. I actually watched it on a plane. My first watch was on a plane ride home, like on the small screen. And I'm like, the girl next to me was, I kept seeing her peer over, and I was just seeing it from her point of view. Like, if you're not understanding what's going on in this movie, and just momentarily like keep looking at this movie, you must be like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Shout out to her.
And thank you for not making me feel embarrassed when I was openly crying on the plane too, whoever you are.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of them, not to poke fun at you.
I'm so guilty of that, though, like watching other people's movies while on a plane all the time. I can't. I'm just like, what are people watching? I always want to know. So, like, I'm always taking it.
She must have thought I was just flipping the channel. Yeah. When she
But I think if I see somebody watching this film on a plane and I don't know what the film is, I am tapping them on the shoulder and going, what are you watching? It looks insane. Right, yeah. And I think the blueprint of this film, which is literally probably all I knew, that it was Michelle Yeoh's character, Evelyn, and it's to do with different versions of her in different universes. That's just pretty much I knew. And that it was going to have some form of fighting in it. That's literally all I knew. But that kind of idea goes straight to my soul. Yeah, I'm interested in that. You know, some kind of sci-fi action with a little bit of extra kung fu in, of course. But I didn't know anything else. Didn't know anything else about it. And it's so much more than that, I guess, isn't it?
I think, like, I'm the same way. I think I watched the initial trailer for this, and the only thing I can remember from the initial trailer was the googly eyes, and that A24 on their shop, they were selling googly eyes to promote this, and I jokingly said, well, I can finally afford something on the A24's website, because it was, like, $7 for a bag of, like, googly eyes or something like that. But where I came in, I think I was at a different advantage than you guys. Not advantage, but different mindset going into this, because I had seen Swiss Army Man before, which is, I'm going to say the Daniels first movie, which is a movie starring Paul Dano and Daniel Radcliffe. And I know we were talking a little bit about it before this, but it's not fast. I wouldn't say that movie is fast like this movie, but it is bizarre. You know, it's about a man using a dead corpse to survive in the wilderness. And so you get the sense of their humor, and that they like really odd, weird things. So I knew this movie was going to be very funny, and I knew this movie was going to be very odd. So I had that, but was not expecting, like I said, the whiplashness of it all, the like fast pace, like we're going and we're hitting the brakes really hard if we do hit the brakes, but then we're just going immediately, like as fast as we can after that.
No, I was going to say, I didn't really know them, or Swiss Army Man. I just saw the, you know, the scene where he's farting to move the jet ski forward or something. I had really no idea. I didn't know about them, and I didn't know, like, that movie got them, Marvel was talking to them to do season one of Loki.
Oh, really?
Which I thought probably, looking back, would have worked, and they turned it down to do this movie, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Listening to the commentary, they seem pretty grounded and not really full of themselves. Dudes, they seem pretty... You know, open mind, like pretty cool. And like, even, there are parts where they're like, this is like so stupid. Like, is this stupid? Is this too stupid? Should we even be doing this? But they seem like they have a great relationship.
Yeah. And I think
you don't see that with two.
I think, you know, calling themselves Daniels rather than the Daniels really emphasizes that, Mikey, doesn't it? You know, bit of respect on the name, Marcy. Thanks. The message they're trying to convey. So I saw this the first time. This week, two nights ago, and do you want to know what my first thought was as the movie comes on? Okay, I'll tell you. Oh gosh, that's Data in this film. I didn't know he was going to be in it. What a pleasant surprise. And I'm thinking already, this is a bit of a warm blanket if Data's showing up. And I want to ask you, did you go, oh, there's Data, or did you go, oh, there's Short Round?
I try not to, and I even have a note to say, not call him Short Round the whole movie. But,
so you're a Short Round
in my
guy.
Mind, I was like, I assumed that he stopped acting also, too. Like, he was in those two giant movies, and I was like, he must have just decided to, like, go to school or something like that. And to come to find out, it seemed like he was like, everybody stop calling.
Oh, really?
With his life.
Well, you know, do you know what he did for, like, so he, this is, like, his first movie, I think, in, like, 20 years. Do you know what he did, between like acting and then like coming back to this movie? He was assistant directing a lot of movies, and actually one of the movies he worked on was 2046, which is a Wong Kar-wai movie, who also directed In the Mood for Love, which mm-hmm. has a heavy reference in this movie. So mm-hmm. it's kind of cool, like the full circleness of it. So he was like behind the camera working on movies for a really long time. But I love him in this movie, and he has yeah. the same energy that he did when he was a little boy. And it's so cute that he yeah. never lost that part of him. Mm. And yeah. I think he is just so adorable in this movie. Like, even like Alpha Wayman, regular Wayman, every Wayman he plays. Like, that's the fun of this movie. This cast is great, but you get so many different versions of these people. And he's just like, but like, you know, there's that scene where they're, you know, they're going to do their taxes, and he just pops up with like an like umbrella or whatever. And he's like, all right, I'm here to tell you, like, and you're like, what just happened? Like, you know, is this her husband? Is this another guy? What is going on?
Yeah.
And it just like, it jumps like right into it. It doesn't like it. There's no like explanation. There's no like, okay, so this is why this is this. And I love that. I love that. You know, like I said earlier, I don't want my hand held. I'm either going to figure it out or I'm not. And if I like it enough, then I'm just going to keep rewatching it till I figure mm-hmm. it out. And I like that they give us, you know, that room for that.
It's a hard role because, I mean, he plays kind of a comedic role. And then when he's fighting, like, I bought him as the
that's
badass.
Him fighting. Like, that's him fighting. That's him fighting, though. He did most of his stunts. But I just love, yeah. the one line he has. When he's Alpha Wayman, but he's in a Wayman, like Evelyn's husband's body, and he's like, oh, what a weak body. And
yeah.
It's like, oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you mentioned like the fighting scene, the bum bag, the fanny pack. I mean, that's joyous, right?
The most Jackie Chan fight in the yeah. world. Yeah. It's, the most Jackie
well,
Chan type of
yeah,
fight.
Yeah. So good.
You know, This was originally written for Jack. Well, you might know because you watched the commentary. So this was originally written for Jackie Chan, and they decided to make it the mom, the lead character. Mm-hmm. So they got Michelle Yeoh, and it was going to be Michelle Yeoh and Jackie Chan. But you know, I'm so happy Key. I think Key adds something way different to this than what Jack. I love Jackie Chan. Don't get me wrong, but I think Key is like the piece of this.
Yeah, I don't think this hits like it does without mm-hmm. Key Kwan. I'll just leave that there, and we can come back to that.
We need to talk about the divine entity that is Michelle Yeoh, though. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
this is her movie. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was thinking about Michelle Yeoh in that we talked about her in Shang-Chi, didn't we, Marcy? And I kind of said, oh, I'm a bit fatigued by Michelle Yeoh just being automatically cast in every single American movie that deals in Kung Fu. Like, it just feels like there's no... there's no other thought. It's just like, oh, we go straight to Michelle Yeoh. But she was so great in this. And I think because she got a chance to be something more than the Kung Fu person, didn't she? She was so much a mum. Mm-hmm. So much a tired, so, broken yeah. down mum. And I just really felt that. Like, and that she was vulnerable right at the beginning where she doesn't understand things like gross negligence. She doesn't understand the words, you know, mm-hmm. and how she's in this place where she's not comfortable at all. And I think you really got that from her performance.
Mm-hmm. So Michelle Yeoh primarily lives in China, and she will not travel outside of that unless if it's a script. She really, because she wants to be around her family and her friends, and she, unless if it's something that really moves her, she won't be in it. And so Slim does the Letterboxd show with Gemma, and they interviewed Daniels earlier this year, and that was a really fun episode. But Slim added this beautiful soundbite of Michelle Yeoh talking about the first time she read the script for this movie, because they specifically wanted her. And if you feel like crying, just listen to that soundbite about her talking about reading the script. And it's so, you know, she's been around forever, and I think most people know who she is, but it's been really fun just, I think, like, the last year, because Shang-Chi came out, about a year ago, but just, like, the last year, how explosive she's been in this country. More people, I feel like, know about her now than, like, ever before, and this performance has a lot of, like, I know you guys don't care about awards, but there's a lot of awards buzz for her. And I think it's well deserved. And I love her in this movie. Like, who knew she was like this funny? Like, I mean, she is like so funny.
But she's funny in that straight way. as well, which is quite a difficult skill. It's not like you're cracking jokes. You're the straight person, and you have to deliver something in such a way that is still funny whilst whilst not being said in a humorous way. Like, you know, people like Martin Freeman, who maybe his career's gone off in a different path, but who is so good at just being ignorant of what is going on around him and just coming out with things that are hilarious while he's just being really annoyed. And she did such a good job of being that straight person in this, yet being hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Like, one thing, and this is something I always like to, like, quote around the house, or we like to try to act like her when we do this. So one of the fun things is, what are those things he puts in her ears? I can't.
They're just like Bluetooth headsets. Yeah.
Okay. So Alpha Wayman puts these Bluetooth headsets in her ear, and she has to do, like, everybody, if you want to, like, learn a specific skill or something really quick, you have to do something super odd and unexpected before you can hit the buttons and make that skill happen. Like, you could learn, like, karate really quick or something like that. But the very first time she has to do that is when she, so Jamie Lee Curtis is also in this movie, and she plays the scary IRS lady that we were talking about. And she has to tell her that she loves her, but means it. So we'll always just be like at the house, like, I love you. Like, the uncomfortable, because she's not, she cannot show emotion. She's not very good at it. And her just trying to figure out a way to say this convincingly so she can learn karate to kick her butt is so good. But I just love her in that moment of her just keep trying to say, I love you. And it's not going well at all. It's so good. But then she eventually, she does get it. And I mean, just little things like that where it's like, she's like, the evolution of the character too is like part of the performance, and it just adds so much to it. But she like you said, she is like the straight woman in this movie. She, oh my, like, come back next week, it'll be easier if you come back next week, like, don't bother me this week, like, you know, like.
And she's also you mentioned that she's been a bit more well known in America, and she's been in Star Trek, right, hasn't she, Marcy? So I'm gonna have to get that in there. Philippa Jojo from Star Trek Discovery.
You're right, though. She was typecast a lot as like the badass, like, female kung fu expert. But crazy, you see her in Crazy Rich Asians. She was really good as a mom. That's the first time I was like, man, the range she has in this. And she has to do, you know, the full spectrum here in acting. Jamie Lee, you mentioned her. She was another one that really campaigned to, she wanted to be in this movie really bad.
And this is a very different Jamie Lee performance, too.
I think, picked out all the clothes. She picked out all the little trinkets on this woman's desk. They said she even picked out, like, the perfume she would wear. That wouldn't even translate into a movie, but she really embodied this character.
So, I love watching this again because you pick up on so many things. And on my rewatch this time, I was like, oh, my God, she is every picture of her cat framed on her desk. I love this woman. That speaks to my heart so much, like, having framed pictures of your cat. And there aren't just like two or three, there's like 5 to 8 pictures of this cat on her desk.
Really wanted it too, because she was like, for so long, I think she being an actress brought up in the air, she was, your body was like your image, really. And she had so much of having to suck in her stomach the whole time, and she thought this was the character that was her stomach, that wasn't a prosthetic.
Oh, really?
She wanted to be an elderly woman and really not have to hide behind you know, the fake Hollywood idea. Even Michelle, who's beautiful, she, you know, they were like, we're not gonna put her makeup, she's gonna look like somebody that doesn't take care of her.
But I was thinking about that, like, how many of these type of films have a middle-aged Chinese lady as the, you know, as the star in, but not just a Hollywood middle age, like, looks her age, and, like, purposefully looked her age, you know. I love seeing these type of stories delivered through different sort of vehicles, you know, that you, so it's not that typical alpha male. And you sort of mentioned Jackie Chan, Marcy, and obviously Jackie Chan is a legend, but I think it feels like so much better, doesn't it, now that when we have it from as Michelle, as the mum, Evelyn, rather than Jackie as the dad.
And I think, too, also having Key instead of Jackie Chan And just everyone else in this movie, like Miguel, you were saying, like Jamie Lee Curtis just looks like herself, or, you know, Michelle, like they're showing their age, but it makes this movie feel real. Like these are real people. Mm-hmm. And those are the types of movies I connect with the most, mm-hmm. where it's like, you don't have to be like a size zero supermodel. That's not real. No. That's not a real thing. Like these are real people dealing with real crisis. Like they're getting audited, for God's sakes.
Yeah, let me summarize where we're up to in the film. So the Wong family own a laundromat. They're being audited by the IRS. So they go to the audit office, which is Jamie Lee Curtis is there. But Evelyn, who's Michelle Yeoh, her husband, Wayman, he changes during a scene in the lift where he is what Marcy and Mike have been referred to as Alpha Wayman, and he is a Wayman from a different universe, a universe where Evelyn was a successful scientist who learned how to communicate with different versions of herself from different universes, I think is where we're up to. And then it becomes this story about Alpha Wayman trying to enlist Evelyn's help to beat the big bad villain of the Omniverse, Jobu Tupaki.
I also want to just add, because this is another actor that I love very much, but James Hong plays mm-hmm. Evelyn's father, Gong Gong. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's classic. Always great to see him, too. Like, love him so
I
much.
I didn't realize that dude's 90.
Holy moly, 91?
Yeah.
No wonder he was in a wheelchair half the time.
He's doing pretty well.
Yeah, well, he did look good. He did look good. But so, I think, Marcy, I'm going to set you up to talk about something you really love, maybe. Okay?
Okay.
So I'm watching this film. What film am I thinking, Mikey? What film is it reminding me of during this sort of scene in the IRS where she's learning Kung Fu and all these different things? What film is it reminding you of?
Huge influence. Daniel's even mm-hmm. said this. This was the very Matrix yeah. moment for them, where it was a huge, huge.
Yeah.
Influence.
So it's so obviously signpost. It's got like basically where might as well wear a badge. We love the Matrix. God, and I'm with you. I love the Matrix, and I was into it. I'm loving that. Right. And then there's this scene where Evelyn's trying to explain what's going on to her daughter Joy and Wayman, and she's going, you know, it's like that film. It's like that film. And I audibly said out loud, "The Matrix." You know, I was alone in the room. Nobody was around me, and it came out of my mouth. I couldn't stop it. I went, "The Matrix." But no, Marcy, what film did she compare this to?
Evelyn is comparing this everything going on to Ratatouille, which is a movie she has made up about, instead of it being Ratatouille, and they're like trying to correct her. They're like, "Do you mean Ratatouille?" She's like, "No, the raccoon, and the, you know, like, and it controls him, and then they make food and stuff." I know we'll get a little bit more into Ratatouille, but there are some huge payoffs in this movie where you're like, "Oh, it's funny. She thinks the movie's called Ratatouille," and you think that's the end of it. You really are like, that should just be the end of it, right? Oh no, we get a full real Ratatouille.
But what I love about that scene is I think that's genuinely the only time I can remember Joy, the daughter, seeming happy. Is that when her mum confuses Ratatouille with Ratatouille, and she's like, "No, you mean Ratatouille, right?" And she's beside herself with the fact that her mum has made up this entire film about a raccoon underneath the chef's hat. But yeah, are we gonna leave that there then?
I think we can, when we get to the center of the movie, we can talk a little bit more about Ratatouille. But since we're talking about Joy, I just want to mention that she's played by Stephanie Hsu. And the only other thing I had seen her in before this was Shang-Chi, and it's a very minor role. She's like one of the friends of Shang-Chi that they all went to like,
in the bar
together. It's very, like, you wouldn't even recognize her, honestly. Like, it's such a minor role. And she is just very, very good in this movie, too. And she's got a girlfriend named Becky. I'm sorry, I can't remember Becky's name or the actress's name for Becky. But, you know, that's one of the things, like, you know, there's something about Joy and her mom. Like, I mean, it's pretty standard mother-daughter relationship where, like, you're not fully connecting. You know, something's off. But her mom cannot, you know, she, instead of saying she, like, cares about her or whatever, she just says, "You're getting fat." That's what she says to her. Or, like, you know, "You need to work on your, I think she speaks Mandarin with her father and Cantonese with Wayman. So it's two different dialects.
It's the way around, I think.
English to her daughter And that's a big thing is communication with each other. And that's, I think, where the main thing is.
I read something interesting that, like, that was intentional because it's, they all just don't understand each other. Like, literally and emotionally, they don't understand each other. And that's so smart. But, like, how relatable is that? Like, just, like, not your mom, you want your mom's approval or your dad's approval. You want your parents' approval. And yeah, I think Wayman is a good dad and loves Joy for who she is and everything and is that support she needs, but she needs it from her mom too. And so there's that divide too. And we get that in the very beginning. And that's very important for the rest of the movie as well.
There's a lot of cultural things in there too. Like Daniel Kwan growing up Asian American, and he, you know, some of the nods to like calling Jenny Slate, who's a customer in the laundromat, calling her Big Nose. It seems mean. And he said people came up as mean, but then he says some of the Asian people watching was like, that's you know, that's a name, like that's something that they would do. Also, like, just being like the mom, like, I guess, and that's the real, I guess, conflict of this movie. I don't know if you realize at this part too, but like me, I realize Jobu, the booty, whatever, that's going to be her daughter, and that's the real conflict. And that's because she has, you know, she has a girlfriend, but she's open to it, but she still is walking this line of being like a conservative, like, reserved Asian older lady who emotions are not something that that's spoken about or a language that's common or easily accessible for them, especially with another generation. I think that comes out in that scene, like calling her fat was her kind of saying she's concerned for her, but it just comes out in that kind of mixed up way.
And I think,
like, really offensive. Like, but
I will say the powers too, like, going back, because we kind of skipped, but that is, Yukari are introduced, which, you know, superpowers, like in comics, like when we grow up with it, is like, that's the coolest thing I think about coming up with an original superpower. And I thought this one, even though it was a lot like The Matrix, that's pretty cool. You can access another version of yourself that's really excelled in some area that you had interest in this. I thought that was really cool. Also, I thought the visuals were great, because even if you don't follow what, like, Wayman's telling her about crossing over different universes, you get this visual of, like, the slingshot, I think they call it, of going to these other alternate dimensions, and you have to you access it by doing something that you would never do in this universe, which I thought all of that I thought was like super cool, and it wasn't really hit you over the head with. It just kind of was like you learn it as you watch this.
The launch pad,
right.
Like the first one is Wayman with the chapstick. And it's so funny because these security guards like come, you know, to like arrest them, and he's like, oh, I got this, and he pulls out this chapstick, and you're like, what's he gonna do with the chapstick? And then he eats it, and you're like, what the hell is going on? And then the next thing you know, he's like fighting.
He knows kung fu.
But oh man, what is so great about this though is like sometimes the powers they learn are things that like you might not think are special at all, like the sign twirler or the we'll get more into the like hibachi chef.
The chef, I think the chef was like, I thought it's so clever the way they used a skill in something as a superpower. So the singer who had better lung capacity because she knew how to hold a note could walk out of a room that was filled with gas. The chef who knew how to use a small blade to cut a dog's lead so the dog went flying, you know, and all these little things that it was such great little cute choices beyond, and we do see somebody inhabit the body of a wrestler, but, you know, not the obvious choices. And it was just, and that enhances it. That just makes you just think, ah, this is something. Because, I mean, we talked about The Matrix, but I said it tongue in cheek because it really did remind me of The Matrix, but it didn't detract from my enjoyment of that bit at all. But you could clearly see they're in an office, they're crawling between cubicles, they're downloading information. At one point, Wayman says, I need a new exit. I'm like, okay. I loved it because they're putting those little different spins on it, aren't they?
Well, I think
I think he said, oh, is sorry, this the part ahead, two where he says, snap out of it? And it was such like a short moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
But think, that scene too that you're talking about in the office walking around, that was Marcy to bring it to your Jurassic Park. That I got that, you know, hiding from the velociraptor vibes from that.
That's what's so smart about this movie. And also I think makes it a warm blanket is, you know, if you love movies, you're going to find those connections and homages to other movies when you watch this. And I think that's part of like the overall comfort of this movie. And, like, it's making fun of itself. Which, yeah. Like, you know, like, saying, like, snap out of it. Like, and then the In the Mood for Love bit that we'll get mm-hmm. a little bit more into, I'm sure. Like, that's so smart. And I love mm-hmm. that. But, you know, you're kind of like the Leo in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood pointing, like, ah, I know what that is. I get that. Mm-hmm. Like, ah. And, like, mm-hmm. but it's just so much fun. They are, like, Daniels, I'll just say Daniels, and how much they love movies. And what's better than, like, watching a movie created by people who love movies? You know, that's why we're all there. Yeah.
We're talking about it as a warm blanket film, and I know that you two really liked it. And I'm watching it for the first time, and I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing. But I'm also feeling quite apprehensive, because I feel like, am I not getting it? Because I'm watching the first half, which is yeah. part one, and it's called Everything, which is when we see her with the cool powers. We see Alpha Wayman with the cool powers, and there's lots of really good bits in it, and I'm enjoying it. I'm really enjoying it. I haven't got a connection yet. You know, I haven't really... I've not had a moment that's maybe gone, this is a five-star movie. This is a really good movie that I'm really enjoying for all the reasons we've discussed. But I was nervous. And I was nervous at that point that I wasn't going to feel it, and that I was going to let you guys down.
Yeah, is this falling off? Yeah, is this falling off the rails? I think when the hot dog, when she tries to jump to a different universe and she doesn't do it successfully, and she has hot dog fingers, and there are those moments where I'm like, is this getting a little too goofy? Is this getting a little too much? But I think then it, like, you look back in hindsight and be like, you know, that's what makes it work. You have no idea what's going to happen, I think, mm-hmm. in certain parts.
But
I think this leads perfectly into the everywhere section, which is like the middle.
That's
part
what
of
I
the
was
movie.
Trying to do.
But that's
what I was trying to do.
That's where I think the meatiest parts are, if mm-hmm. we want to say that, maybe. But I think what we should say before we get into Everywhere is that we do meet Jobu Tsubaki. It ends up being Joy, and that really did surprise me, because you hear a name like that, you kind of see her a little bit, but she's like, it's like silhouetted, or she's got like hats on and things on, and when you find out that it's her daughter, you're like, oh, things are getting real deep now. Yeah. And I was genuinely surprised that the main villain was going to be her daughter. I don't know how you guys felt when that was revealed.
I think I made the mistake of watching a trailer before I watched it, and I think Joy was revealed as the villain in the trailer. What I will say is, I think out of all the choices possible in a multitude of universes, it was the best choice.
I think they alluded to it when Wayman's telling her about the bad guy, and I think he's saying there's somebody that Alpha, tried to do something mm-hmm. and it went wrong. And at that point, I was like, it's gotta be the daughter, and it had to be, you know, because of this conflict you mm-hmm. could see in the beginning of the movie.
And it's funny because, like, there's that really funny line where, like, Wayman's explaining, like, yeah, Jobu Tsubaki has killed Evelyns all over the multiverse, and she's like, who would want to kill me? And then you think back on how she is with her daughter, and you're like, oh, yeah, it makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. But then I think that's when it started to click for me that, oh, this is about her mm-hmm. getting back in touch with herself, her husband, her daughter, her family, her father. That's what this movie is, but it's just like all these crazy explosions going off around it that just make it like so much fun. Like, what a simple concept, but they add so much pizzazz to it that it's like, this movie is so complex. How we get there, how we get from point A to point B is like, it's not easy, and it's a lot of fun. But it is nice when it does. Like, so is that what happened for you, Dirk? Like, when it clicked, like,
well,
okay, this is...
Tell you my day, all right? So I watched it Friday night, and it was my last day in work of the week, obviously. And I'd had a really, really shit day, like a really terrible day at work. And I was back super late, and I'd taken a lot out of me sort of emotionally, and my energy levels were really down. And I knew I had to watch it, and I wasn't sure I was going to get to watch it on any other night. So I put it on. Kate had gone to bed, and I'm watching the first bit, like I said, and I'm feeling, I really like this. This is hitting all of my buttons. I really like this. Maybe I'm too tired to kind of feel anything more than I really like it. And then we get to part two, Everywhere. And there's a bit in it when everything changed, and I just think I cried for the entire rest of the film, pretty much. Aww. Cried, not just to myself, sobbed. And the next day I woke up and my eyes were sore, and I cried again in the morning by myself in the kitchen. And I think I even cried a little bit this morning, 3 days removed from it, just thinking about some of the themes and some of the conversations that I touch on. And it's such, I think, as you said, the beginning is so fast. And I'm like, am I picking everything up? I'm probably not. And I'm blaming myself because I'm tired. And but then it slows down. It slows down, and you get the sort of emotional, and I don't think I've ever connected so much as an individual to a film in this bit. And I felt almost like it was a personal affirmation of some of my own values, and that it was exactly the film that 2022 needed. And it was exactly the film that I needed at that moment. Going beyond that, I had a conversation with Katie the next day about something. And I think I said maybe we could watch it tonight together. And I was sort of, this is at the end of the day, maybe we could watch it now together. And I think I was trying to describe to her how much it had affected me. And there's a message that I will come back to later in a bit, maybe. But when I told her about it, she just looked at me and she said, "Do you know what? I thought you'd been happier today." And I was just like, it was overt. It was obvious that my behavior had changed, which entirely was down to watching this film the night before. And I don't think I could ever say that about any other film.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Ooh, that's crazy.
It was crazy.
I think, like, for me, like, so one thing really odd. So I've seen this 4 times now, and I rewatched this twice for this episode, and I saw it twice in theaters. I've never cried watching this movie. I feel so odd for saying that, but what for me, like, is warm blanket also is connecting to things. So I have a constant struggle mother-daughter relationship. I've definitely probably mentioned it on the pod before, but I get very happy that, you know, Evelyn makes this decision that she's just going to be everywhere. She's going to do everything that Jobu Tepaki has done to better understand her and learn everything that she can to try to solve the problem that is Jobu Tepaki, or understand, like, what happened to Joy to get her to where she is, where she's just this really bad person, kind of. Or, you know, I don't know if we'd say bad, but just this
misunderstood,
complex, like, villain. Yeah, misunderstood. There we go. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, my mom would never do that. But what I find in the beauty of that is that this is a mom willing to go above and beyond to find a connection with her daughter, not realizing that she is the issue though too. But it takes, like, that self-discovery and, like, you know, self-reflection of herself, and also looking back on her relationship with her father to see, like, maybe that's why she is the way that she is. And then, like, also, like, fixing other things like her marriage and whatnot, and her overall attitude. So that really gets to me, but for some reason it doesn't make me cry. But there's this really beautiful scene where Jobu Tepaki and Evelyn, you know, she shows her the bagel for the first time, the bagel with literally everything on it, and she wants, you know, Joy to, or she wants Evelyn to, like, join her in the bagel where, like, nothing matters and it'll just stop everything. And I think that's when the rock scene happens, where we finally get silence in the whole movie. There's not, like, nothing happening, and there's just two rocks on, like, a cliff in the desert, and you just get, like, words, like, you know, subtitles. Subtitles, my favorite. I love that so much because, you know, like, it's normal to be overwhelmed. It's normal to be depressed with life. But I always say, when I'm feeling those ways, like, can I just be a rock for, like, an hour and not have to think about anything or do anything? And there's just this sense of calm in that scene. And it was like, oh my God, I'm not alone. Like, other people want to be rocks when they're like, they can't handle everything. And I just love that rock scene so, so much. I don't know if it like got to you guys at all, but I just love the rock scene. Was just, like, probably the most relatable thing for me in this movie.
I was probably weeping at that point anyway, Marcy. So
okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it was like this for you. I'm actually surprised. You know, I was invested with these characters, mm-hmm. and the emotional crux of this movie is definitely where I was starting to lose it. But even before then, Dirk, and I don't know if this was happening to you, but I started thinking about those alternate timelines of myself, mm-hmm. and you start thinking, you know, what if I like hit that shot, or mm-hmm. what if I did art school or went to film school, or what if I told that girl I had a crush mm-hmm. on what I felt about her? And I started relating to it in that way, and especially when she said, yeah, you know, this version of Evelyn was the best because she wasn't good at anything, which you know, sometimes we all, I think, feel like I'm not the best version of myself and I'm not doing anything right. And that was actually why she was able to do all this other stuff.
Yeah, it was interesting. She's the best because she was the worst, so she could learn everything.
But that's when I started hiding my face from the girl.
I think for me, it was the conversation, the dueling conversation of the two Waymans with Evelyn. The In the Mood for Love universe, is that right? In the Mood for Love. And the Prime universe, I guess, for want of a better word, where Waymans is kind of explaining his philosophy. And I think I literally just broke down when he was talking about that. And his idea that, you know, it's not naive to always see the good. And actually, it's strategic and necessary. Mm-hmm. And he sees himself as a fighter, and that's his way of fighting. And I just, you know, that's kind of an epiphany moment for me, I think. You know, I just kind of, I don't know, just not seeing myself as that level, but like, that is how I choose to view the world. That is how I would choose to address a situation. I'm not saying I'm not cynical, and I'm not saying I'm not a pessimist at times, but it's the overarching way I would choose to live my life is that way. The Waymond in the Prime universe has said, can't we all just be kind? Even when we don't know what's going on, especially when we don't know what's going on, we need to be kind.
That was the emotional apex, I think, I was thinking. Because I assumed it was going to be a resolution with the daughter. I wasn't expecting it with
me Waymond. Too.
When we talked about the miscommunication, he was trying to talk mm-hmm. to her. I actually missed that they were divorce papers in the beginning. I didn't get it till he was having the conversation with Jamie Lee Curtis. And, you know, he's having this conversation. And that's when I was not expecting that, where I think we have, like, the movie looks like it ends. And then we pull back and we're in, like, the Michelle Yeoh is the, you know, the Michelle Yeoh, actually. It's like the Michelle Yeoh universe. And she's mm-hmm. a movie star. And it's an alternate timeline when she doesn't go to America with Waylon and open up the laundromat. Mm-hmm. And I think she says it early on, like, or he says it to her. He's like, I made your life worse. Like, you followed me. And she got to see her life without him, and it looked glamorous, and it looked like everything she wanted. Mm-hmm. And he even tells her, like, don't go to that world. You're going to mess things up. Like, if you want to be mm-hmm. in another universe. And it was this conversation, I think, when he sees her in the alley, when she realizes, like, I don't know, she comes to this realization that he was like a bright shining star in her life, and he like solidified mm-hmm. her. And he, even though they had this strained marriage, like they were, I don't know, even in alternate timelines, they found each other, which I, mm-hmm. which I think I was not expecting. Mm-hmm. It was really, that was the emotional weight, I think, of the movie.
And I think, like, how I was mentioning earlier, like, Wayman is a good father and he understands Joy and he gives her that emotional support she needs. So I think she has to understand Wayman before she can understand Joy to help Joy. So I think, like, those conversations she has with him, and she has to fix things with him first before she can go and save her daughter, because he knows what she needs, and it's love and it's kindness and it's what all these other people need that she needs to get mm-hmm. through to get to Joy. But one really cool thing, and I didn't pick up on this, but I read about it. Maybe you heard it in the commentary, Mikey, but the everything bagel that's going to, like, basically destroy Joy and everything, you know, is a black bagel with a white center. And whenever she's working her way up to Joy up these stairs, you know, some bullets are shot at her and she freezes them and she turns them into the googly eyes. Now, the googly eyes are from the beginning. Waymond is putting them on different things like bags and the washing machines and stuff. It's just showing, like, his fun sense of humor, but that he is, like, good natured and he's kind and all this other stuff. So it's the opposite. It's a white circle with black in the middle, so it's the opposite of the chaos and the destruction of the everything bagel. So that's why she puts the googly eye to enact the like, or start off the kindness and the love train that she gives these people going up the steps and everything. And I think that's just so smart. Oh, that's interesting.
I saw that as, like, symbolically, like, taking something Waylon that was driving her nuts in the beginning of the movie and putting that in her.
I mean, in a way,
like, the third eye, like, it's like an enlightenment, the third eye. But it was that connection and using his, what Dirk was saying, like, his ability to love instead of fight. Because I just thought it was going to be a Kill Bill on the screen type of finale, but it was like, instead it was like she beat them all with love, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, but I don't think you're wrong though either, Mikey. Like, it's something that annoyed her in the beginning, but it's coming to terms and accepting her husband for the wonderful man that he is, and that he's gonna help her become a better person to make these other people better people. And that's why she's embracing the googly eye in that moment. And it's really clever, it's really sweet, and it's really beautiful. But I think she does have to make amends with Waymond before she can do anything to help her daughter.
And I was, my sob knob was turned up even more when she turned to him and she said, he said, "What are you doing?" And she replies, "I'm learning to fight like you." And I was like, "Oh my God, you got me again." But it's this whole film is, because I, you know, when you start a movie and I kind of anticipate, I'm kind of anticipating maybe where it's going to go in that, you know, Michelle Yeoh is going to have some kind of epiphany and revelation. But what I really loved is it's like the whole family have that. Like, it's, you realize it's a movie about the entire family, don't you? And it's not just the central character. And while Michelle Yeoh has a little bit of a moment of clarity when she realizes why she married Waymond, and she sees what he brings to her, you know, which is another thing it kind of resonated with me, in that, like, I look at my own marriage and you just think, sometimes you just think, God, you're two so different people, and, you know, and, you know, how does that work? And just the idea that he brings something that she doesn't have, and she has something that she doesn't have, he doesn't have, and that's why they're together, that's what they bring to each other, there is that balance. But then while she's having that moment of clarity, Joy doesn't have a moment of clarity. You know, and you know, it's not everything is resolved just because Evelyn has decided that she now understands her daughter better. The daughter's situation hasn't changed. And you know, and then we've still got a journey to go with Joy and Job Tubaki, or however you say her name. I just thought that was such a smart choice, because normal movies would have finished, I think, when Evelyn made her realization, but this one didn't, and it kept going.
The stuff with Joy, it feels like the cherry on top. If it was just the stuff with Joy, I don't know if I would have been as emotional. But it is, Marcy, going back to what you said, I didn't, you know, the Everything Bagel, it's another wacky thing, but not to downplay it. Like, I didn't draw that comparison, actually, to the googly eye. But the Daniels, I guess, I messed up. But Daniels, they also did some of the work on it in terms of animation. And they said one of the first things you do with, like, 3D animations is learn how to make a donut. And that's like, so that was like their extrapolation from that.
Yeah, I think,
but
I read...
it was like this representative. You see it throughout the movie, and it was just a representative of what Joy said. Nothing matters. And if she, at this climax, if she goes into this bagel, it's sort of like the point of no return, where she's going to have a strained relationship with her mom and Michelle Yeoh's trying to get her to stay. And it's interesting what she says to her too, because, you know, when Joy says it to her, she says nothing matters, and it's like sort of like a teenage emo thing, like everything's bullshit, and we should just all kill ourselves kind of thing. And Michelle Yeoh kind of uses the same line, like, nothing matters, like, it's you, like, it's I love you, and nothing really matters. And I thought that was amazing that they use the same line to sort of give it such the complete opposite feeling.
And I love too that, you know, it is about her relationship with her father too, and she's looking back so much on that her dad let her go and didn't talk to her for a really long time. So there's this scene where Joy is gonna go in the bagel, and Evelyn just kind of accepts it, and she's like, okay, like, if that's where you want to be, go be a part of this bagel and be nothing. And then she realizes, no, that's not the answer, that's not what we need to come together again. And that's when she grabs Joy, Waymond grabs her, and then her dad grabs Waymond, and like, that's like the really, like, like Dirk was saying, like, it's a family, it's everybody in the family. It's not like the dad's not just there for laughs, like the dad also, like, I think maybe not as much as Evelyn, but he kind of sees that, like, Waymond is good for Evelyn, Waymond is a good father, maybe it's a good thing they did go to America. And I think maybe he has some regrets about not talking to his daughter for so long. Because there's the one universe where, and it's, I think, like you were talking about it, where Wayman, like, gets Evelyn out of trouble with the IRS lady, you know, by saying, like, well, she's in a bad mood today because, you know, she saw these divorce papers or whatever. And when, like, that's when Evelyn realizes, like, it's through kindness and just being honest that solves issues. Because she's like, well, what did my silly husband say to you? And then they have, like, a heart-to-heart about, like, tough marriages and things like that. But there's also the sweet moment where Evelyn's trying, they go back to that universe, and she's trying to make up for a situation earlier where she called Becky Joy's friend and not girlfriend to her father. But there's this really sweet moment where she finally says, this is Joy's girlfriend. And now Joy runs off because they have to still patch things up. But it's so sweet how excited the grandfather is and holds Becky's hand and how much it means to Becky, too. And so I think that's like a wake-up call for him, too, as well, that like, oh, like this is my family now. This is what's happening now. And I'm not going to push people away like I pushed my daughter away. And we're going to try to make up what we can here and everything. So I like that. It's not as much as Evelyn. Obviously, he's not the main character, but there is, you know, some stuff for the dad to figure out as well, too. And it helps Evelyn a little bit more as well.
Yeah, and I didn't quite when I was watching it the first time, I was kind of the sort of the meat of the story with the Jobu Tupaki and stuff and the bagel. You know, it did move a bit quick and I was kind of not quite sure of where it was, but I managed to watch it twice and it was much clearer then. And there's the whole story of how Evelyn in that universe wrecks her own daughter by pushing her too hard as well, isn't there? So there's that whole aspect of Evelyn's dad, I don't know, affected Evelyn's mental health and her self-esteem because of the way that he just let her go. And then Evelyn pushed her own daughter too hard and that's what broke her own daughter. And it's that impact then of, you know, what do our parents do to us? And how can we kind of step back from that? And when do we realize as parents that, I don't know, we've perhaps not handled things the right way. But that's the bit I was talking about before, Marcy, when that's when I would have traditionally thought the movie would have finished, when Evelyn had that conversation and accepted that and introduced Becky, the girlfriend, to the dad. But it continued because this is also Joy's story. And I think the thing that really struck me the second time when I was watching it was like the reason why she creates the bagel, it's about her being overwhelmed. It's about her being overwhelmed with everything. She can see everything. She can hear everything. And it's too much. It's too much for her. And she can't live like that. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, like, my generation, we were kind of sold a lie a little bit that everything's easy, or I was just beyond the boomer generation when money wasn't a hard thing to get hold of or whatever. When we kind of believed it and were sold a lie, and then have realized life is more difficult than that. But the generation below have always seen how hard that is, you know, because that's the world we've lived in for the last 20 odd years. And so Joy has always known that to be true. And she's always had that kind of overwhelming sense of nothing matters because it's all crap and it's all shit. And, you know, of course it's going to end like that. And so it felt like to me she creates the bagel. Well, she creates it to kill herself, doesn't she? She wants to not exist anymore and she can't live with that. And so that's why when I was watching it again, and that bit when you think it's going to, the movie should end because Evelyn's had her moment. It's so important that Joy has that time then afterwards to kind of not, she doesn't get over any of that, but she has a conversation with her mum and realizes that maybe there are something that she can hold on to and some bits that she can cherish in life. And I'm sat there going, oh my God, you know, like this, there have been times recently in my life when I've just said, I'm miserable. I'm really miserable because of everything, because it's hard work being a parent and it's hard work earning a living. It's hard work worrying about the price of how much you have to fill up your car with petrol and all of this stuff every single day. But I think I almost kind of learned again in that there are moments you can cherish, individual tiny moments. And I think that's what they say, isn't it? Like, you know, you could be anywhere. Why would you be here with me, with your daughter who's fat, doesn't eat healthily? Why would you choose that? And they choose it because there's going to be moments they can still cherish in the normal day. And I thought, oh, you son of a bitch. You son of a bitch.
Yeah, that was a nothing matters line. And it's interesting. I was reading Daniel Kwan when he was writing it. He was thinking she was able to access the multiverse because the character was going to be ADHD and she was going to be like all over the place. You kind of get that when she's distracted and she's not listening. And he discovered he was when he was doing the research. And I think they scrapped it, but I think it kind of makes sense to, in that vein, what you were talking about was just to focus on what is important to you. Mm-hmm. There is a lot going on. Everything you were just saying, there are things that are hard. Then you can be like, all this is shit, but you have to focus on what is important to you. None of that really does matter. The only things that matter are what you should hold on to, which is your family.
Mm-hmm. This is like a family coming back together story. That's it. And it happens in a lot of movies. It's very, like, a very simple concept, but the way they bring it all together, the way you unpack it, the way the characters are unpacking it, and that it's not just like one solution, it's multiple solutions, and it wants to make sure that there's, like, you know, clarity, and there's something for everybody in this family, not just the mom, not just Evelyn, not just Wayman and Evelyn, not just Evelyn and her father, you know, but Joy and Evelyn as well, too. And I think that's what makes this movie so special. You don't have to have a crazy, weird concept. I know I'm saying that, like, all these crazy things happen, but it's just, like, if you just deliver your message well, it works, and it really works in this movie. And I think it's nice that we all found different ways to connect to it. You know, I'm not a parent yet. I looked at it more at the mother-daughter relationship. Mikey, I think you looked at it a lot as an artist, which I think is really fascinating in a really cool way. And at least on your initial watch, maybe it sounds like. And Dirk, I think you were just looking at, mostly as like a family man. And it's funny just how a movie like this can connect with different people for different reasons. And I think that's what makes it a warm blanket. So there's my argument for it there.
I think it will be. That was a risk to say this will be a lifelong warm blanket. I think it will be. Mm-hmm. It was like they went through hell just to learn how to talk to each other.
Sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah. From what I gather about maybe American politics is that sometimes being kind is seen as a weakness. We don't get that too much over here. Kindness isn't a weakness, but I think, I don't know, I've certainly seen that rhetoric from some politicians that, you know, you don't want to seem weak. But I just love the idea that kindness is fighting, because, you know, you don't have the energy to be kind the whole time, do you? Being kind takes effort. Being kind to that person who's just rude to you, being kind to someone who, when you're on your job and you're just trying to do your job and you're trying to help someone with whatever, you know, and they're just being rude back to you. And it kind of makes me think of a TV show called Quantum Leap, which I don't know if you ever watched, Marcy, which is about about a guy who was a bit like that. He would leap into different lives. And he would always have a task to do by the end of the episode. And it was normally sort something out, you know, something like save a marriage or, I don't know, drive a race car real fast, something like that. But then when it got to the end and he got to the finale of that show and he was tired and he wanted to stop doing it, somebody said to him, do you see that you've achieved? You know, do you see it just as influencing a few little lives? It's more than that. Every life that you touched another life. And I really feel like that's what kindness does. And that, you know, if you are kind, other people will see that. Not everyone, but then they will hopefully take that as inspiration and show that kindness to other people. You know, and I've really felt that in this, that this was one of the strong messages in this.
That's beautiful. I mean, kindness is, I love what you said about kindness is fighting, and not to be like, you know, the dark side of the force is it's easy just to fight everybody or to give in to the hate or give in to, you know, Joy uses her omniverse power to just fight everybody and create conflict. Mm-hmm. And in the end,
all she wanted was a connection with her mum. That's all she wanted. You know, she actually, you know, she was trying to achieve it through whatever, murder and mayhem. But what did she want in the end? She wanted a connection with her mum, and she wanted her mum to understand her. She wanted her mum to be in the same position she was, so she felt what she felt, and she wanted that with her mum. That's all it was.
Well, it's not just that. Like, yeah, Evelyn's I mean, she has conflict also with Waylon. She also has conflict with Jamie Lee and with her father, and she solves all her problems. She has a resolution through that kindness, not just with her daughter, but her daughter was the vehicle that got her there. I think at this point, it makes sense to start talking about the 2-foot dildo.
Yeah. I was going to say we haven't even talked about the dildos or the ass implants.
Emotions. I think since we got through all the emotional aspects, I think we should talk about some of the crazy fun things that happened in this movie.
Butt plugs.
Yeah, that's
it. As soon as I saw those trophies, I was like, why she got 3 butt plugs on her desk? Little did I know.
I just love when the light bulb goes off for Evelyn and she realizes what's going on and she keeps moving it and she's like, no. Oh my gosh. And then you see that other guy come running and you're like, oh my God, no, please, no. But I mean, also, I mean, we do get the payoff of Rakakuni. Rakakuni is who? Rakakuni. And I love that, like, I didn't notice this the first time, but on my rewatch, the first rewatch, you do see his little raccoon tail out of the hat and everything. And also on this rewatch, which was great. So there's this beginning scene where they're singing karaoke as a family and you just see the reflection in the mirror. There's a freaking GD raccoon statue right next to it. So, did you guys know? So obviously Rakakuni is making fun of Ratatouille or paying homage to Ratatouille, however you want to look at it, which is a huge Pixar movie. Rakakuni is played by Randy Newman, like one of the big composers of Pixar movies. And when I first saw this movie, I was like, man, does that sound like Randy Newman singing? And I had to go home and look it up. I was like, they got Randy Newman to play the freaking raccoon in this movie. And I just...
Speaking of the music, Andre 3000 was doing the score.
Oh, really?
So there were certain... parts where, yeah, oh, wow. They kept saying that. I missed that.
I didn't know that. Other funny thing with music, too, and I'm sure you guys maybe caught this, but Wayman does quote the song Story of a Girl at one point, and then every different universe they're in, there's a different rendition of Story of a Girl.
I don't think I even know what that song is.
Movie. Oh my God! It's from like the early 2000s. Oh, I can't even think of who sings it. It's a one-hit wonder song. I love that song so much. And it's the your clothes never wear as well the next day and you're something something. Wayman says that to her. That's a line from that song. And then there's different versions of the song in every universe. Yeah. That's why these rewatches are so great because you're like, oh, that's a really slowed down weird version of it. Oh, they're saying something else in this. You gotta really listen for it. But I've always loved that song. It came out like when I was like in fifth grade and I've always liked it. And I was like, I can't believe they're quoting this song of all the songs in the movie. And then there's just like, I don't know if the actual band it has anything to do with it and all the different versions. I meant to look it up before we started talking, but totally forgot. But yeah, that's something. I'll send you the song. Almost jokingly made that my song pick for this episode.
What was the song called?
It's used so much. It's called Story of a Girl. Yeah, Story of a Girl.
I think that's the song. They did say they licensed the song because they did use the lyric. I guess that was it. I missed that part.
That is it.
Did have to listen.
Okay. Mikey, do you not remember that song either?
I mean, you just said you were in fifth grade in the year 2000, so I want to puke right now.
I mean, I've just looked it up. I've never heard of this song in my entire life. 9 Days, is that them?
It's 9 Days, that's the band.
In America. What about you, Mikey? Any other fun bit?
I think one of the things that was interesting, I thought, was like they started shooting and then COVID hit and they had to kind of halt production. And they there were certain scenes where they shot with Michelle like on a green screen via Zoom, which I thought was pretty interesting. And that I forgot how, you know, everything really did shut down. We were just talking before this how it doesn't feel like it exists anymore. But a lot of... obstacles here, and even just to because sometimes when you watch something being like, how did they get everybody on the same page with this bonkersness for like months on end, and that to have this halt of production and maybe like a year later pick up again and be like, remember that crazy thing we were doing the hot dog? you gotta go back to the hot dog fingers. Seemed like everybody had a blast on this movie. That's the other thing I think that came through was that it was you know, even the art department really shined, I think, in a lot. I don't know if you know, there were certain things like Taxi the Pterodactyl was in the IRS and they had this like cartoon pterodactyl which I thought was like amazing.
Oh my gosh.
But the art department I think was on point, I think, with everything in terms of like, you know, I've seen some like Halloween costumes they've had from this movie, and it's recognizable. You don't really think about it when you're watching it, but there's some recognizable even outfits they had in here.
Yeah, I think Deirdre is recognizable.
I'm glad it worked.
Mikey, I agree with you, though. Like, every interview I see, I follow Michelle Yeoh on Instagram. Every article I read about everybody that's in this and worked on this, they just have nothing but good things to say. And the fact that this came out earlier in the beginning of the year, when that's usually a slower time for movies, and the fact that it is now, like, almost December, and the hype for this movie is still there, like, it just feels like a train that never stopped this whole year. And I'm so happy, because it's getting more people. Like, my boss watched this movie. He really liked it. He did really like it. But then I was like, oh, go watch Swiss Army Man. And he hated that. But he did really like this movie. And it's like, yeah, it's getting people like that normally wouldn't watch something as bizarre a concept to watch. And I think that's really cool. Like, you know, like, it's just opening more people's eyes and maybe making people
this
like,
is think the type of movie. I am not recommending this movie to anybody. This would be one of those things that gets overhyped and somebody puts this on, and halfway through it goes, what are you talking about? What is happening?
I kind of felt
But you're right.
I was kind of worried that's what happened to me. I'd been overhyped, and it, you know, then it then it came to me.
Yeah, I was telling you guys before, but I was don't have my finger on the pulse. I didn't. I was like, let's talk about this movie. I don't think enough people are talking about this movie, and I'm oblivious to the hype now. I didn't know it was even up for, and rightly so. I mean, I hope they get recognition in awards if that means something to you, but
yeah, I do so highly too, coveted. Because that'll even bring it to, like, so the Independent Spirit Awards just got their nominations out, and it I think it had the most out of everything, so that's just like independent films, that's like not the whole, you know, Hollywood and whatnot, but I think it is going to get a lot of Oscar nominations, which is exciting, especially because Michelle Yeoh's been around forever, never had one, and this will be really cool to see her get that. And unfortunately, like, I know the Oscars always annoy me, but I'm also addicted to them, but that gets a lot of people to watch things that they like. Look at Parasite. How many people watched Parasite because it won Best Picture that probably would have never given Parasite the time of day? So I'm hoping the same thing, you know, happens with this movie as well.
I think this is one of those movies you freeze frame on any given, like, when they're going through the whole other universes, you probably find a lot of surprises.
Well, there we go. Anybody want to say anything else before we move on?
I'm just glad we got to finally do this, because this has been in the works for a while. But you know what? I'm really happy that it ended up being a warm blanket mix pick, because I think it is a warm blanket movie, a really, really odd one. But it hits all, or like, it checks all those boxes that I had last week.
Yeah.
Not really, but you know what I mean.
I think it is a warm blanket. I think it's a warm blanket because of how it made me not feel, I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, I think I made more connections, like I said, to this film than I've probably done with any film, probably ever, honestly. And I could quite happily, I think I could do with a medicinal dose of Everything Everywhere All at Once on a weekly basis just to change my mood from being grumpy to optimistic.
So it's a warm blanket movie for you too, Mikey, then? So
yeah, it's definitely going to be a warm blanket for me, I think, going forward. All right, good. It definitely will put me in. It's definitely one of those reflective movies. Yeah, where you step back and take a look at your whole life. I think it will be. Okay.
We made a good choice then. Well done, all of us.
Well, I weren't involved in that, but well done you too. But so what we got to do now, though, is we got to make our other connections. We got to make our musical connections. Have we all got a song that we feel represents or reminds us of this film? Sure. Marshy.
Thank God I listened to the last episode. I forgot about this part, and I was like, oh, fuck, I'm trying to do that for this
That's
movie.
Me every week, Mikey.
Oh, I'm sorry that we've...
Can I go first just because I have it? I feel like it's going to get taken.
Sorry, we have to have
conflict. And I hate taking something that's well-known, and I hate taking a song that's more famous for another movie, but I was thinking of this song and how some of the lyrics are just nonsensical. It almost makes it feel like, are you even taking this seriously? And then it has one of the most melodic parts to any rock song you could ever think of, and it actually ends with the line, nothing really matters, and that is Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Beautiful.
I thought represented beautiful. This movie, where it's craziness, oh my it has gosh. This beautiful part, and nothing really matters.
It has an opera universe. And even the video is a little bit like kind of fractured. Do you know what I mean? Like with the heads, you did it.
Yeah, that was a cool. That's a cool. Special.
You did it. You did
it. You're right. You drew. You did it for me.
That's actually really great, Mikey. And I wish I didn't have to follow that, but I'm just going to get mine out of the way. So in this multiverse of me picking a song, it's just okay. It's fine. But I went with the Japanese house and their song Something Has to Change. And I just feel like that's the general vibe of this movie. Like something has to change to get this family back to what they were. Something has to change with all the relationships. Something has to change. And it's Evelyn. Evelyn has to change. And she does.
Well, they kind of all, well, they all have to change, don't they? You know, Waymond has to step forward more, which he does do. Joy has to face what she's feeling. Yeah, and Evelyn goes through what she goes through. And it's like that bit where Waymond is a alpha. Waymond is first trying to explain to Evelyn about what they're trying to do. And he's like the quote in the song, like you said earlier on, you know, like your clothes don't fit as well. The coffee doesn't taste so good. Have you not ever been there lying in bed at night thinking? And then she finishes the sentence. How do we get back? And I think that's it sometimes. It's not just it's not even just the family. It's a feeling of how do we, the world, get back to how things were after 2 years of a pandemic, of distancing ourselves because of that, and the economic crash and issues that everybody is facing, the cost of living rise, and just over here, you know, bloody Brexit, and nobody liking anybody coming in from a different country, whatever. You know, how do we get back to that time when everybody was just nice? And that's what I kind of thought as well. That's what stuck with me. So I think you've made a good connection there, Marcy. Not heard the song, but I reckon it's a good sentiment.
It's a good song. I like the song a lot. All right, Dirk, what's your
So after crying my eyes out, I was kind of in a place where I was thinking, well, I can't not think of something that makes me cry. And also there was a connection. There was the big thing, like you said, Marcy. Maybe I saw it from the perspective of a family man, and a family, you know, that's been together for a long time, and is always going to have ups and downs within that. And there's a band called Elbow. Elbow is a UK band, and they're a band that my wife discovered because we were together. We got a free ticket to go and see them because my friend couldn't go or something. So we got tickets. She didn't really know them, and it's not really her type of music, but I kind of knew them a bit. But we went together and she loved it so much that Elbow then sort of almost became our band. You know, it was something that we kind of discovered together, and they do lots of amazing songs about family and, you know, little moments in time. And there's a song called Scattered Black and Whites, which is about remembering snippets of times in your family when you were younger, and not them being big deals, like we went to, I don't know, we had a great day out, but just like when you hurt your knee and your mum comes and tends your wounds, or when your dad tells you a story about something that happened in work, and they don't seem like big moments at the time, but when you're older and you need somewhere to go, those are the places that you go. And that just kind of made me think about, you know, Evelyn and Joy's conversation at the end about there'll be moments in there that we can cherish. And that's what I really connected with towards the end. And it was funny. It kind of made me just listen to them the next day, the next morning. And normally if I'm in the house, and if I can, I'll have music on. If the kids are not watching TV or something else. And I came downstairs in the morning and I put different Elbow songs on. And when Kate comes downstairs, she said, are you listening to Elbow? I was like, yeah. And she came over to me and she gave me a hug, and then she gave me a little kiss. And that was a moment that day that I cherished. It's a beautiful song, and they are beautiful moments.
Oh, well, glad you went last. would hate to follow that. So, thanks for sharing, Dirk. I know you picked Elbow once before.
Did I?
So I know they're a band that...
I can't remember. Yeah. But if you have ever eaten chewing gum off the undersurface of a desk to enable you to download powers from a different universe, why don't you write to us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com? Or if you're so inclined, if you've liked the way that Mikey has been talking and you think he holds a pencil real good and he colours in really nice with crayons, why don't you follow us on the Mikey_movie mixtape at on Instagram, and you'll see all of Mikey's wonderful art on there. But we do have an email. Let me try and find it. Okay. So we got an email. It's from Tim Hamilton.
Oh, Tim.
Happy Thanksgiving, Marcy, and happy regular old normal Thursday, Dirk. Thanks. Dirk, you definitely have to get on Succession. You will love that show. If you want a serious answer for my warm blanket movie instead of my usual Zaprunda film, I oddly enough would have to say it's one of the Man with No Name films. Probably The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Yes, it's true the American version of Pride and Prejudice have an extra different ending. I don't know if you saw the Canadian ending to Pride and Prejudice. That version ends with Mr. Darcy becoming obsessed with elevators, even though they don't quite exist yet. He works tirelessly on creating safe elevator doors, but never quite gets it right. Anyway, the British ending is the best ending. And how about the ending of that 1970s animated Lord of the Rings cartoon? What was that? Enjoy the show.
Oh my God.
Tim Hamilton.
Oh my God, Tim. I'm going to let you slide for not telling the Lord of the Rings story because that Canadian ending was perfect. I thought he was going to say they went to Tim Hortons.
So do Canadian people really like elevators?
Oh, I guess so. I'm not aware of it. If you're Canadian and would like to tell us what your thoughts on elevators, please write in.
Tim, thanks for that. Yeah. He never fails to miss an opportunity to mention Zapruder, which, because I've got no idea what it is, and I still don't know if that's a real thing or not. And you can check him out on the SETI BIMCO podcast. Now, that's it for him.
He'll enjoy your Star...
What you say?
He'll enjoy the Star Trek. He'll enjoy the Star Trek reference. He's, in the Quantum.
I know, he's the only person I do the Star Trek references for, because, to be honest, every time I say that, Marcy rolls her eyes and she opens another packet of crisps and starts chewing them off camera as if I can't see her doing it. But what we got coming up next week, Marcy...
So, this was our shared movie, and we got to share it with Mikey, which was lovely, but we actually have another guest on next week. So, our dear friend Ron from Real Latinos, but also Ron who writes in really lovely emails, the whole picking a song for each episode, that wouldn't have been possible without Ron. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about it next week. He is coming on. He picked his warm blanket movie, and we are covering The Goonies. So I'm very excited. And nice. We get to talk about Key again. So nice. this is really, it just dawned on me, back-to-back Key movies.
That's the only time it's ever happened in podcast history that we talk about the same, one of the same actors, one week to the next. Never happened before, all because of Ron.
I'm trying to get the Matthew McFadden mix going, but you're not letting that happen. So maybe when you start Succession, we'll get on that tree.
Speaking of Ron, check out his Everything Everywhere All at Once review on Letterboxd.
Well, do you know what I was about to do, Mikey? With his permission, he has said it's okay to read this review. So Ron's coming on next week to talk about The Goonies, but this is his review for Everything Everywhere All at Once. You ever not know you needed something like, say, a hug, until someone gives you one without provocation and you're kind of just overwhelmed with the realization that, hey, I really did need that and didn't realize it. That's the best way I can describe watching this movie just now. I was pretty excited to see this when it released earlier in the year, but kept missing the opportunities, and then the hype got out of control. I don't believe in fate or destiny or anything like that, but I'm glad I waited. I wasn't ready for it then. This year has been a very chaotic one for me. I stopped trying to make sense of things because every time I'd attempt to get my bearings, a new variable would be introduced. I can't remember the last time that I haven't felt like I was moving one step up and two steps back. Today's Thanksgiving. Now, I don't put much stock in holidays. I haven't since my parents split up when I was 12 and traditions turned into obligations. I got off work today, texting my wife, who's visiting her mum 200 miles away, heated up a burrito and threw this movie on. I may not have seen this back in March, but something I did do was come across a podcast called The Movie Mixtape, two friends chatting about movies that they watch. It's one of the few things that allows me to clear my mind and just engage with their conversation for a bit. Something of a warm blanket, if you will. Speaking of, they decided which movie to talk about based on theme mixes, and the current mix's theme happens to be warm blanket. Everything Everywhere All at Once is about a lot of things, one of which being how small decisions can alter your path. Small decisions like listening to a podcast called 1995's Mortal Kombat seem fairly inconsequential. Had I never listened to that podcast, would I have eventually watched this movie? Probably. But tonight, alone in my apartment on Thanksgiving, eating leftover Taco Bell, listening to my dog and cat snore around me, 100 miles away from the dysfunctional family that I avoid on holidays, I press play on Everything Everywhere All at Once. Not because I thought it would be a good Thanksgiving movie, not because I was particularly in the mood for it, but because Dirk and Marcy are great people and I love their podcast, and it's the movie they are covering next week. My Warm Blanket podcast chose this as a warm blanket movie. I had heard it was good. I'd heard that it was fun and funny and even heartwarming. What I was not expecting was for it to be cathartic. Kung fu action and VFX heavy interdimensional jumping, sure, but poignantly tackling depression, regret, familial toxicity and generational trauma, I did not have that on my bingo card. In recent memory, the films that I've seen that have made the biggest impression tend to be bleak and devastating. I like the feeling of emptiness they evoked. This movie didn't make me feel like that. It made me feel like time and effort can improve situations. It made me feel like even if we make mistakes, big ones, repeatedly, we can still keep trying to get it right. It made me feel like it's okay to accept things sometimes and just keep going. But most of all, it made me feel a little less alone. Like I'm part of something bigger, something significant that keeps me secure and comfortable with myself. Sort of like a warm blanket. There you go, all my days. We should have just read that at the beginning and not recorded anything.
That's what I was going to just say. I was like, that should have just been the episode. And then just Mikey saying hi really quick. And
then yeah. Ron should have been here instead of me. Bloody Nora.
Bloody Nora.
Bloody Nora, Ron. Jesus.
Well, Mikey, I, for one, am glad that you were here because you are my shining star. You are my warm blanket, as I'm sure Marcy would attest to the same feeling. But that's what you can expect from Ron next week. That's the bar that he's set. Don't worry. He's going to talk like that all the time, real smart-like. but yeah, well, there we go. That's it. That's the end of the episode. Yeah.
Thank you, Mikey. I'm so glad, I don't know, we got to go on this journey together. And I don't know, I'm going to look at this movie in both of your perspectives, I think, the next time I watch it. And I think that's going to add another layer of the blanket for me. So very much looking forward to that. And thank you, Mikey, as always, just... you know, for just being the best and for being here. And I love the art so much this week, and it makes me so happy. And again, like, the little special touch in it also makes me very happy. Might be the best part of it. Sorry, Mikey, just saying. But yeah, this was so much fun, and hopefully we'll have you back on soon.
Yeah, kind of.
Thanks, guys.
No, I was just going to say, Mikey, I was watching this film, and I was thinking about you pretty much the whole time. Because I think we're kind of from, I don't know, I'm a bit older than you, but we're sort of similar generations and we're in similar sort of familial positions. And I just wondered how you were feeling when you were watching it. I kind of get that we were both in the same place. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Thank you for having me. This adds what Marcy said. This adds to the warm blanket feeling, I think, talking about it with you guys. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I better go start that Goonies art. That's a great movie.
Because you know what? We're all useless alone, but it's a good thing. That we're not alone. That's what Evelyn says in this film. Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's poignant.
That's actually from that song.
Sorry, is it? It's what she says to bloody Chad with Rakakuni. Well, we've been talking for 4 hours and 72 minutes, so we better call it a day. Thanks to everybody for listening. We will see you all next week. Bye.
Bye.
Suck on that, you suckers.
Tape is a podcast hosted by Dirk and Marcy, mixed and edited by me. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Find us on Instagram at the_movie mixtape and catch new episodes on Wednesdays. Thanks for listening. Bye!